Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for July. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. It's summertime in the Bay State, and as you hear this broadcast, the ACB National Conference and Convention will be taking its place in the annals of history. We'll have more to say about the conference and convention in our next show, but during this show, we'll be dipping back into our own local convention, which took place on March 9th, 10th, and 11th last spring. This month, we'll be wrapping up our series on travel, and following that, we'll have an update from Kim Charlson about the goings-on at the Perkins Library. But before any of that, we have a technology update regarding the BSCB website. As many of you know, a few months ago, our BSCB website took a serious hit, which necessitated us reconstructing the website pretty much from scratch. I'm happy to report, though, that thanks to the work of Jacqueline Talisano, we are now back online. The site is still under some construction, but if you go up there, you will be able to see the progress that we've made thus far. We have a little more work to do, but keep checking back, and I think you'll see in the next few months that our website will be back in business and better than ever. And while we're on the subject of technology, a reminder that our BSCB Fillmore box is officially up and running, has been since June 15th. When you call the box, you'll be able to leave a message or check out one of several new menu options, including the ability to listen to Council Connection. We hope you'll check it out. The number is 773-572-6312. And remember that this is not an 800 number, so long-distance charges may apply. You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. Summertime is a great time for travel. Of course, some of us are out in St. Louis doing just that, taking advantage not only of the ACB conference and convention, but availing ourselves of some exciting tours. For the last couple of months, we've been talking about the mechanics of travel, booking trips, online resources, and finding your way through airports. Now let's go beyond the planning stages and see what happens when people put their plans into action. To help us do that, we have a panel of three people, Deanne Elliott, David Kingsbury, and Daisy Russell. Here they are to tell us about their adventures.
We're going to try to pull some things together here by talking to you today about three different kinds of travel experiences you might have for leisure. And we were going to organize our presentation alphabetically, but between Daisy, Deanne, and David, we just couldn't handle that. So we decided to do it geographically. I'm going to talk about a nearby vacation that you might consider. David's going to be talking about a cruise, and then Daisy's going to talk about something a little bit more exotic. So about 3 years ago, David and I made a trip down to New York City, and we were there for about 3 days, and this was a trip that we spent some time putting together. It required some advanced planning. We took a bus, which is called Go Bus. Maybe some of you have taken it. It goes from here to New York City and down to Washington, D.C. It's really very economical. It's less than $20 per person one way. And it's a very nice bus with Wi-Fi. You can book it in advance. It leaves about six times a day from the Alewife station in Cambridge and then also from Riverside in Newton. And it drops you off in downtown Manhattan around 30th Street, if that's a consideration. And then we found a hotel that was, you know, reasonably priced somewhere in the Midtown Manhattan area. And, oh, let's see, we did a lot of really fun things. We went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and we made arrangements to have a guide from their accessibility department show us a few things in their Renaissance collection, I think is what we did. And then we had an appointment at J.P. Morgan Library, and again, that was an accessibility tour. We wanted to work in the September 11th Museum, and they do have a nice accessibility package, but we unfortunately couldn't work that into our schedule. We went up to Harlem and went to a really nice Senegalese restaurant. Some of you might know that David was in the Peace Corps in Senegal, and I guess it's hard to get good Senegalese food here in Boston, but we found a really nice place there, and David enjoyed speaking in Wolof to the staff, and it was just a fun evening. And then we went to Dangerfield's Comedy Club, and we went to an Italian restaurant, and we did a few other things. And we had a hotel that had a nice pool, so we just spent some time. It was in the summer, so we spent some time hanging around in the pool. And the thing I liked about it was that it was relatively inexpensive, and it was just really fun. We got to see and do some neat things. We did it on our own schedule. We could leave when we want. We could come back when we want. We got around mostly by Uber. We didn't really use the subways. We weren't familiar with them, and the Uber seemed to be the most direct way, although that could be a little bit pricey because given downtown New York City traffic, the price has got to be kind of high, especially during rush hour. So one thing that I had done previously, a few years before, we had gone down to Washington, D.C., and I was able to call the ride and make arrangements to set up an account with Metro Access in Washington, D.C., and I made a deposit of like $40 for the few days that we were there, and then we used paratransit, and many cities will allow you to do that. So I think if I were to do this again, we would try to make some arrangements so we would have a choice between paratransit and the Uber. The advantage was that we got to see a lot of really interesting, neat things. Maybe a disadvantage was that it did require a lot of advanced planning. We started planning several months in advance, particularly setting up the accessibility tours. It required some back and forth with email. And since we weren't as familiar with those locations as we were with, you know, calling the Museum of Fine Arts, for instance, it took a little bit of time to work with your staff to figure out who it was that we needed to talk to set those things up. A lot of it we were able to do in advance, like buying the comedy club tickets. We researched restaurants online in advance so that we knew that the place that we were going to was kind of in the same neighborhood as the place that we'd just come from or that we were going to next. I took all of the details and put them in a Word file and then saved it as a text file and put it on my Victor so that we always had the address and the telephone number and the location and all the ticket confirmation numbers at the ready. And when we were meeting someone, for instance, at one of the museums, I made sure that I had a cell phone contact for that person and I had it programmed into my cell phone so that we wouldn't have to go fishing around for it. So I think advanced preparation was the key to making that an enjoyable weekend. And I said to David as we were sitting around the pool, it was really very much like planning a wedding because, you know, you plan for months in advance and then on the day that you're there, you just kind of float through the experience and it's all very nice. So making it a successful day where you're not freaked out by, you know, there's a little bit of that anyway because we're in an unfamiliar place. But the key to that, the success of that vacation, I think, was in the advanced planning. Maybe another small disadvantage would be that there wasn't a lot of spontaneity. So again, kind of like a wedding, you got your salad course, you got the champagne toast, then you're cutting the cake, and that's just the way it's going to be. So we did have to kind of move with intention from one activity to another. But that being said, it was a really great time. It was one kind of vacation. I'm really happy we did it, and I'm already kind of pestering him, like, when do you think we should go down to New York City again? And we're discussing whether we go to Dangerfields or whether we go to another comedy club. This is our issue now. So anyway, that is one possible vacation that you might take. And now I'm going to turn it over to David, who's going to talk about something very different. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Where is the? I still vote for Dangerfields because I like that. He's my favorite. So I'm going to talk about doing, I would call it, you know, a semi-independent cruise. But before I do that, I can't resist telling my drop-off story. And after I tell this, Deanne may not want to go with me anywhere ever again. But a few weeks ago, Deanne had a gift certificate to Longhorn Steakhouse. And the only one that still exists, as far as I know, around here is in Reading. So we took the Uber and put in the right address and everything and got to Reading and told the Uber driver, Longhorn Steakhouse. And he was very nice. He brought us to the door, brought us inside, right to the waitress who sat us down, and then we decided to order. And of course, Longhorn Steakhouse, first thing we asked, you know, what you got for steak? We hadn't probably been good blind people in terms of preparation, in terms of checking out their menu. I says, well, we have one steak, and it's a this or that, I don't know, T-bone something or other. Sort of thought that was strange, but thought, well, maybe they're like on a health kick of some sort, and they're moving away from meat dishes. I don't know. But Deanne got the steak, and that was really good, and I didn't want that one, so I had some pasta. And they had some really, really nice, good bread with dipping sauce and the beer that I liked and everything. So it was a very nice meal. And then the bill came, and Deanne whipped out the Longhorn Steakhouse gift certificate, and the waitress said, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, you're at Bertucci's. And it turns out the Longhorn Steakhouse was next door. Now, what does this have to do with independent cruising? I just want to make the point that if we can do this, anybody can do this. Okay? So what we've done the last couple of summers for a week each time, we've taken Norwegian Cruise Line to Bermuda and had a very, very nice time. In terms of accessibility, advantage number one is that you can take that right from South Boston. So you can take the ride or an Uber right to the boat and right away from the boat. So you don't have the whole hassle of having all the travel that we've talked about to go to New York first or Miami first and coming back and the extra day on both ends that entails. So you're right on the you're right on the boat, and it's Friday to Friday. What I really liked about this trip, it did involve some advance planning for sure, but nowhere near as much as one where, you know, you've got to sort of regimentally plan each and every minute. The reason being that while you're on the boat anyways, everything is self-contained right there on the boat. You've got to figure out your way around, but there's a basic logic to the boat, once you figure it out, that does not make it so hard to get around, and that is there is a fore, that's, you know, sailor talk for the front of the boat. There's a midship, and then there's an aft, which is sailor talk for the back of the boat. There are elevators and stairs at each of those three places. And then all the sort of addresses for the, you know, the various restaurants and lounges and entertainment rooms all will have sort of like an address, like 8th aft, so that's 8th floor aft. So you can already sort of figure out about where you need to go to get to the to where you're going to. And of course, there are plenty of people around to help you out and so on, whether it be staff or just other people who are on the cruise. One thing that we did that was smarter than average was that we asked for a couple of accommodations. What they typically do for, you know, pretty much anybody who takes one of these cruises is, you know, each morning they'll slip under your door a hard copy piece of paper that tells you what, you know, the menu choices are for the day in the various restaurants, what the entertainment is, and so on. And of course, that wasn't accessible to us, so we asked for Wi-Fi, and there's Wi-Fi on all the cruises, and we asked for just like a limited amount, which would maybe be $80 if you paid for it. And they said, no problem, we'll give you the unlimited. So that was a $200 thing, potentially. And we arranged with the travel person in charge of us on the boat to email us either a Word file or a PDF the day before. And they did that very diligently. It was great. And so we could get the menu for tomorrow today and the events planning for tomorrow today and just look through all of that and sort of figure out, maybe we'll do this or that, or maybe we'll eat at this particular restaurant because it looks like, you know, they've got some interesting specials for that day. They also would let you know whether certain things are gluten-free, which is also nice. That would be right on the menu, a G in parentheses right next to it, if that's something that mattered to you. So we could do that planning, and for me, I really like this because we could be spontaneous. Because you're on the boat, you know, if there was some show at 2 o'clock this afternoon and it's 1:30 and you were planning on going to it, but now you don't really want to go, you don't have to. You can just sit on the balcony and listen to an audiobook or something like that. It really felt like it was more spontaneous. And for me, this felt, when I've done these two vacations, it was really the first vacation for me as a blind person that totally felt like a vacation. It was just really relaxing. The New York trip was a lot of fun, but of course there's the stress of going through Manhattan and this and that. And even if, you know, if you've planned a tour at 2 o'clock at the Metropolitan Museum, if you're a little tired, you still have to go. You can't stiff people on that. So you really do have to stick with it. And this, you know, this was really nice in that you could be spontaneous. There's also, you know, shore excursions, and as an accommodation, we asked if a person, a staff member, could accompany us. Not really thinking that would happen, but they happily gave us one staff person to take us to beaches or on different tours. And those individual staff people were very happy to do it because they're getting paid to go to the beach. Versus getting paid to do something sitting in the office or something or other else. So they were very happy to do that with us, and they were always very, very nice and gracious. The one negative that I would say is a little strange about the Norwegian Cruise Line is the room numbers. The room numbers were not brailled, and they didn't even have raised numbers. They had sort of recessed numbers, which is basically unreadable. And the irony of that, we thought, was that at the same time they had that, and they had done a major refurbishing of the ship earlier the first year that we went, just a few months before. One of the refurbishings they'd done was to lay a whole bunch of new carpet in the hallways. And they'd made it so that they had little fishies swimming upstream. So stupid sighted people could know that the front of the ship is where the fishies are going. Someone with a brain could probably see that the numbers are going up or down and remember that, but they took special care for sort of clueless sighted people to make the shippies, the little fishies go upstream, but they couldn't do that for Braille. Luckily, we figured one little thing out. The room that we had the first year, just by happenstance, right, happened to be right near like a sill, like, you know, where there's a little piece of wood raised up in the hallway, and there are only two or three of those on each floor. So when we found that, we knew we were right next to our room. And the second year, we reserved the exact same room, so we would have that. But it would be better, obviously, if they had the rooms brailled. And my understanding is that for other cruise lines, they generally do a better job in that. But that was, you know, the one thing that wasn't really perfect. Again, other than that, like I say, you could be really spontaneous. We spent a lot of time just on, you know, the balcony, just listening to the waves go by and the water and reading books and so on. And for me, it was a really, really nice vacation. So, something you might want to think about. Thank you.
So, this is Daisy, and I traveled to the land of mists and volcanoes, which is not Hawaii. So I went with my school last May on a service learning trip to Nicaragua. And so I'm going to tell you the story of how, first of all, I got involved with this trip and then what it's like being in another country, especially a developing country like Nicaragua. So I had a professor, and she kept going on and on and on about Nicaragua and this place she had traveled to and this organization she volunteered with and, you know, how it was such a wonderful trip. And so that kind of got me really interested in learning more about this trip and what they did. So I met with this professor a few times to ask her a lot more about it and details and things like that. And she ended up encouraging me to go. And so I applied to go this trip because it's a service learning trip. You don't just go. You have to go through this whole application process. So I applied, and she was one of my recommenders. And so I got accepted. The next step was to do some fundraising, so I did some fundraising. And again, I kept talking with this professor who had been to Nicaragua multiple times and could tell me a little bit more about it. And she kept saying, oh, we got to go do these like practice mobility lessons because it's rough terrain out there. So she kept trying to make these plans and it never happened. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll be fine. You know, my mobility skills are pretty good. So So I know we just heard a lot about all these travel plans and apps that you had to use and all this kind of stuff. Because it was a service learning trip, that all that stuff was taken care of for me. All the planning, where I was going to stay, what flight I was going to be on, when I was going to leave, all of that was taken care of. So for me, the biggest thing I had to worry about was how on earth was I going to get around and, you know, how I was going to experience being in another country and things like that. So one of the first questions, as I'm a guide dog user, was, would I bring my guide dog with me? And I ultimately decided no, because I didn't know what I was going to get into. So I didn't want to bring my dog into something that I didn't even know. Oh, yes, travel. how the service learning trip worked was I had to take a course before going to kind of get us caught up on the culture and some useful Spanish. I had already taken Spanish before and was pretty proficient. Yes, Sunny. So that was good. We learned a lot about the culture, what kind of things to expect. And then we were volunteering with an organization called Outreach 360, which has a location in Nicaragua as well as the Dominican Republic. So, and they have, to my knowledge, if they had a visually impaired person volunteer with them, it was not to the extent that I was visually impaired, because they didn't know that I used a cane or red braille or anything like that. So fortunately, I wasn't traveling to another country by myself. I traveled with some classmates as well as two professors that I knew. I did have to go through the whole process of applying for a passport, which is a whole accessibility thing in and of itself. And you know, I had never gone through customs before, so that was quite the experience. And I was experiencing all this not through my own eyes, but through pestering my professor and everyone else around me with questions like, what's happening now? What do you see? What's going on? One of my favorite things to talk about is that I was bitten by a parrot in Nicaragua. And good news, no germs that I know of from that. But what I did there was Monday through Thursday, I would teach classes in English. The first week we were staying on this beautiful, beautiful ranch, complete with cowboys and horses and cows and dogs and cats and a dog named Kitty, actually. So navigating there, I was paying attention to things like, you know, I could navigate around there as a visually impaired person, but there were kind of like drop-off stairs that, you know, I was trying to think, you know, from a perspective of anyone with a disability. You know, someone with a wheelchair could not have navigated independently very easily there at all. I eventually learned my way around the ranch enough that I could walk from the building where we stayed, they were like cinder block buildings, and to the more open main part of the ranch house that was where we had our meetings and planned lessons and things like that. So I was able to navigate around there pretty independently after a while. But we were there for only a week. So after that, we switched gears completely and we went into the city of Jinotega, which is up in sort of like the central Nicaragua. So it was very, very mountainous. That ride was kind of terrifying. We were in this van bus with our luggage strapped to the roof, and we were on these windy, steep, muddy roads. And they do not have traffic signals in Nicaragua. They beep their horn and they just hope you're going to move. So that was kind of, you know, an experience. But, you know, as we drove along, a professor would, you know, point out like, oh, you know, there's a guy with a machete cutting some trees next door. And, you know, there's, you know, just a horse walking down the road. Everyone's pulling over to let it by. And so it was a very, very different culture. But, you know, I was fortunate to be with people who could describe it for me, because, you know, I couldn't get out of the bus and be like, hey, guy with the machete, what are you doing? But back to this parrot. When we weren't teaching, we were on these excursions. So we would go to places like Selva Negra, which was a coffee plantation. I experienced the torrential downpour that is the rainy season in Nicaragua. We also went to a black pottery co-op, which that was an interesting place for a blind person to go because they had all their black pottery sold in this little shop, but they also piled their pottery on the floor, which just seems like a hazard in and of itself for anybody. But if you're blind and you don't want to step on pottery. But one of the trips we did was to this place called Cascada Blanca. It was this gorgeous waterfall, and you could climb down these steep, somewhat man-made, somewhat not stairs. And you could go all the way down, and you could even go under the waterfall. I had to acknowledge that I had some other restrictions that meant that I couldn't climb down these slippery, steep rocks and manage it safely. But then they had this restaurant that sort of opens onto the waterfall, and there was just this parrot kind of hanging around, and we're kind of thinking it was a pet. We're not too sure. But it hopped up on the table when I was drinking my maracuya juice, which is some sort of passion fruit. They couldn't tell me the English word for it, so I just went with that. And he hopped up on my glass and started drinking. And so I reached out my hand thinking, oh, he must be friendly. And then he bit me. And I decided, nope, parrots are not all friendly. Because there was one at the Black Pottery Co-op that was friendly and was very cute, but this one was not. So, I mean, there's just a wealth of experiences. I was there for 2 weeks. Teaching in and of itself was an experience as well. I mean, that was the main reason I was there, but like the way they think of people with disabilities there is different. I kept being asked, you know, where's your mom? Where's your family? What are you doing? And, you know, the fact that I was in college going to be a teacher just amazed everyone. And so I kind of took that opportunity. I mean, I was supposed to be teaching English, but I really took that opportunity to also teach them about people with disabilities and about Braille and how to give sighted guide and how to treat people with disabilities so that you're not sort of, you know, disabling them by thinking that they can't do as much as they really can. So that was, you know, in and of itself a really great thing. I remember I was in charge of the recreation and I taught the kids. We had an obstacle course and we blindfolded them and told them that they had to tell each other in English how to get around these things. And I accidentally hit a kid with a mango. I accidentally hit one of the kids with a mango because they were giving me instructions and they didn't do a good job. they had me go through the obstacle course a bunch of times so that they could see that they could do it. And then they went through and, it was just a wonderful experience all around. I loved, being there. I would definitely go and do it again. And, I can't tell you all of my experiences right here, right now, cause there's just so many, but, that's really my story of Nicaragua. So.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the new BSCB Fillmore box at 773-572-6312. There's nothing more enjoyable on a hot summer day than sitting down with a good book. Whether you're out on the beach or relaxing on your back deck or sitting in your favorite chair in the living room under the breezes of the air conditioner, reading is a great pastime. And here in Massachusetts, we're fortunate to have excellent library resources to help us get the books we want to read. But our library is much more than a reading resource. Here's Kim Charlson, Perkins Library Director, to fill us in.
All right, I'm here to talk to you about the Perkins Library and the Massachusetts Talking Book Program. It's a pleasure to be here to share with you kind of how we're doing and some of the initiatives that we're working on that I want to reinforce with all of you and maybe share if somebody hasn't heard about them. So I'm going to start with just kind of the basic things, just a few. As most of you know, we're the Talking Book Program in Massachusetts, along with our partner, library at the Worcester Talking Book Library. And we've circulated over 500,000 books this year. That's cassette books. Not cassette books. It's not cassette books. Well, it's like maybe three. yeah, exactly. So our digital audio, Braille, Describe DVDs, all the different formats. So circulation is good. The Newsline service is doing well. 3,500 people use the Newsline service every day. We're one of the top four states in usage for Newsline in the number of minutes, the number of web sessions, the number of downloads to your Victor stream, emails, all the different ways you can access Newsline. We break most of the records. People really enjoy the service. They appreciate having access to the daily newspapers and the magazines, TV listings, job listings, all the things that are available on Newsline. And the supermarket flyers. How could I forget those? They are hugely popular. If one of them is out of date, oh, we get calls like crazy. You know, the Price Chopper flyer is out of date. Fix it. Absolutely. The Hannaford, all the different sale flyers, you know, you can access those off of Newsline. So, and that's in collaboration with the Talking Information Center. They do the recording. So we have library passes. Well, the library pass program. The passes are for museums in the Boston area, and also the Museum of Science, Museum of Fine Arts, Isabella Stewart Gardner, Children's Museum, the Aquarium, the Zoo. The Zoo New England is the Stoneham and Franklin Park Zoos, both of them. And these are discounted or free passes that you can order in advance from Perkins Library. And then you can take guests with you to any of those attractions that we provide passes for. So that's a kind of a well-kept secret, but it's certainly a valuable one. If you have friends or family or company and you want to do something, at least get some discounted rates to some of the attractions. And no, we usually mail them. You need to let, if it's required, we mail them out. One pass, Mystic Seaport, that's in Connecticut, but it's a great place to go. We have passes for that, and we have to mail that one out, and you have to return that one. But the other ones, we just mail them out, so you don't have to come pick them up. Well, most of the passes are for a specific day. So usually you would contact the library and say you want to go to the museum on Saturday the 13th or something. And then we would send you the pass for that. The Museum of Fine Arts, I think it's not a dated pass. So you can use that a different day if you change your mind. So we just issue the pass. We're done. You have a pass, and you can use it when you want to use it. We just ask you to use it up within the year because we're part of a program with the Museum of Fine Art, and they give us, you know, discounted passes to do this program, and they keep track of how many of our people use them. So it helps us. If you take them, we hope you use them because that matters to the Museum of Fine Arts. So. You do not, except in the case of a Mystic Seaport. You mail it back. So we also have another program called Library Without Walls, and I think there's a few people in this room. Maybe if you clap if you've heard Library Without Walls. Great. So Library Without Walls is a monthly seminar series, I call it, where we have an author or a presentation on a topic, and it's usually tied to a book in some way. And the author usually talks about the book for about 30 to 40 minutes, and then we open the phone line for questions from the audience. And the sessions are recorded, so if you couldn't make it to the live session, you have the opportunity to listen to the Library Without Walls sessions, and they're always really interesting. So it gives the flavor of programming like you would have at a public library where you'd come in and have an author talk. Well, this is a little more convenient. You can, you know, sit in your living room in your jammies and listen and participate, and you don't have to worry about transportation because it's just right there on your phone. So that's worked well. We average about 40 people a session, which is great. So we're pretty pleased with the program, and it's gotten a lot of support. So audio described DVDs. We have over 1,800 DVD titles with audio description. We have a catalog of DVD titles, and we publish, you know, what's new in the last 6 months, a supplement to the catalog. So we just did one right around December-ish, maybe January. So there's a relatively new list, and there'll be one in the summer as well. So if you haven't borrowed DVDs from the library and you'd like to give it a try, then you should give us a call, and we'll sign you up for DVD service and send you a catalog in whatever format works for you. And we can do it in just about any format. How many patrons? We have a little shy of 25,000 patrons in Massachusetts statewide. We're one of the larger talking book libraries in the country. I think third or fourth. And we also, Perkins also provides Braille services to Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Washington, D.C., North Carolina, and Tennessee. Tennessee, we just started in October of last year. So that was a new state. They're being moved to a building that has no room for their Braille collection. So they decided to outsource it, and they're sending their Braille to other talking book and Braille libraries around the country. So,
did you know that this year, every movie that was nominated for Best Picture of the Year was available with audio description? Every movie.
That is a milestone, because 5 years ago there were only two. So we have, as you probably know, we have a lot of magazines at the library. So besides books, we have magazines, over 100 different titles on digital cartridge, Braille, one large print, that's Dialogue magazine. And we have a couple, we have some new sports schedules thanks to NBP and some of our own work. NBP is doing the Celtics schedule. The library is doing the Patriots schedule. The NBP does the Revolution. And the library has also done NASCAR. So, you know. Well, the NBP does the Red Sox. It's not new, but we've had the Red Sox for a while. We also provide the Red Sox schedule in audio if you want to get that. And once you order it, you know, it's like a subscription. You'll get it every year. So NASCAR is new. We had some people asking about NASCAR. We provide that in Braille right now, and it's been quite popular from some of the southern libraries. They like NASCAR a lot in the South. So I'm a little surprised that there's as many people up here that like NASCAR, but it's kind of a big thing in New Hampshire and places around. So right now that's available in Braille. And no Bruins schedule yet. We'll have to work on that, right, Chris?
Yeah, why not? If they stay good, we'll pay attention.
That's right. That's right. So how many of you have heard of Audible.com? Yeah, okay. So Audible.com, okay. Well, some of you may have, you know, memberships, and that's great. Have you ever wished you could get a book and the only place that had the audio version was Audible.com? Yeah. NLS doesn't have it. Nobody has it but Audible. Yeah. Well, did you know that the Perkins Library has an Audible.com program? So it doesn't give you a free subscription. What it gives you is access to that title. We can download that title for you and put it on a Victor Stream Classic and send you the Victor Stream Classic, and you can read it on the Victor Stream and then return the Victor Stream to us.
I already have
No. No, because every download from Audible is keyed to the specific machine. So it's kind of like the NLS player, and unfortunately the NLS player does not play Audible books. So this was the closest thing we could do, but we can download an Audible title if it's the only source, and we'll double check that and provide that to you on the Victor stream, and then you return it when you're done.
Kim, I'm noticing that there are a lot of commercial audiobooks now.
Yes.
On the library, and I'm wondering, I suspect that trend is going to continue.
It absolutely is going to continue. Steve asked about the increased availability of commercial audio recordings through the NLS program.
Because they get them up there fast.
You see them on Bard. Bard's our download service. And that is through an initiative from NLS that reaching out to the commercial audio publishers to establish contractual agreements with them. So places like Random House and Macmillan Audio and
Hachette,
major audiobook publishers are releasing their whole catalog of their audio recordings to NLS to be reformatted as digital talking books. So NLS then does not have to record those books because they've just been made available, and the publishers are doing that as part of a collaboration and in compliance with the copyright law, making them available so NLS can make them available to all of us.
That's wonderful.
Which is really great. It increases the availability. It increases the speed that you get them. Remember the furor, if you'll pardon the phrase, about a month or two ago, this book from Washington, D.C., about what's going on down there, the fire and the fury. And that made it onto Bard within 10 days.
Yeah.
It was there after the publication of the print book.
Yep.
That was super fast. So I was...
Another one is Hacks, which is the Donna...
Brazil,
yeah.
Oh yes,
and she reads that herself, so you get to read. You get to have her read it.
What's the name of that one?
Hacks.
Hacks. Yeah.
Hacks.
Yeah. Political
it's,
hacks.
It's,
that kind of.
It's talking about all the Russian tampering with the election.
Hacking, yeah. So, how many of you have heard of the Orbit Reader? So. How many of you have taken advantage of our pilot program from the Perkins Library and have an Orbit Reader? Oh, that's pretty good. So we still are in the pilot, and we still have slots available. If somebody is interested in obtaining an Orbit Reader and participating in our pilot, you have to answer some survey questions and give us some feedback about what you like and what you don't like. We're not trying to redesign the Orbit Player itself because it's pretty much done. But what we are trying to find out is how you like a different kind of Braille reading experience. How do you like getting 20 or 30 books on an SD card and being able to access them and take it with you? Do you like it, you know, is it too noisy? Does it keep your spouse awake at night? I heard Bob reading with his yesterday, and it makes a little bit of a noise. Some of us say it's a little purr. It purrs at you, you know. So, but we've got about 55 people active in the Orbit Reader pilot right now. And we still have about 100 to place. I mean, we don't have them. The reason that the rollout has been a little slow is because the manufacturing stream has been slower than anticipated.
So, if we're interested, should we...
Yes, you should call and ask to be placed on the list for the Orbit Reader. You can ask for Corey Cadlick or me,
okay,
and get your name on the list. And you should do that. That'd be great. So, she asked if there was training available. So, part of the yes is a short answer. But part of the package that we want to assess is, you know, when you get it, how complicated or easy was it for you to turn it on, read the Getting Started guide, and figure out, you know, how the machine works, the basics? It comes with a manual on it, and we send a Getting Started guide with it in hard copy Braille so that you can read the Getting Started guide. It tells you where the on-off switch is and how to navigate the menus and charge it up and things like that. So the basics are there. And then Corey tends to be the one that does tech support to help you if there's a problem, if you're seeing, you know, a whole row of P's on your Braille display and nothing will change it. You probably need to talk to Corey because there's, you know, something might be up and he can give you, you know, key commands to try to reset it and things like that. Sometimes little quirky things happen. Okay. So yes, please do, if you are a Braille reader and you'd like to give it a try. You know, it's not, if you don't want to, if you try it and you don't like it, you can return it. But basically the plan for the program is that if you try it and you like it, it's on long-term loan for you. So we're not going to ask for these back a year and a half down the road, because what am I going to do with 200 Orbit readers? So my intention is that they will be there for you to use. And it does have modest note-taking capability. You can create a new file, and you can load and, you know, open and close it and write in it. So you have basic note-taking. Oh, that's great. Yes, it does. It pairs quite nicely to the iPhone. Yeah, exactly. So I want to talk to you about the Bookshare program.
Yeah, Bookshare.
We have been talking for about a year or so about making Bookshare available to people in Massachusetts for free through the Perkins Library. So I'm happy to tell you that the program is up and running. I did a kind of what I call a soft rollout over the last 2 weeks, and the process is in place. So there's two kinds of registrations. If you've never had a Bookshare account but you'd like to have one, you need to reach out talk to me or talk to Corey. And we will send you the step-by-step instructions to go online and fill out the application for Bookshare service. And then there's a promotional code for you to put in so that the Bookshare people will know you are not paying personally for your subscription, but that you're taking one of our Perkins Library subscriptions that we've already paid for. So if you've had a Bookshare account in the past, but it's either A, about to expire within the next 30 days, or B, has already expired, then you can contact me and I will send you information on how to email Bookshare. It's very easy. And what you need to tell them and the promo code you need to get in as a Perkins subscriber, and they will take care of it. It takes about 24 hours to get set up. And we've started doing that, and the folks that were probably the first half dozen or so were my test guinea pigs, and it went well, and they all got on within 24 hours. So it's up and running.
I got in within a couple of hours.
That's great. David Morrison.
Yeah, just a quick question. I'm not familiar with Bookshare.
Oh, sure. So Bookshare is a private, not-for-profit, and what they do is they get publisher files or scanned book files, and they create protected DAISY audio files or BRF files, which are Braille-formatted files. So you can use, you have to use some kind of a device or your computer or your iPhone. Some people use a Victor Stream. You can use a Victor Stream to download Bookshare books and listen to them with the text-to-speech that's in the Victor Stream. You can use them with an Orbit reader. You can use a third-party app like VoiceStream Reader, which is a wonderful app that you can set up your password in Bookshare and download from Bookshare. it works, especially with the Victor Stream, it works very similarly to Bard. When you go into Bookshare, it has the same recently added books, most popular books. It looks a lot like Bard in its structure on a Victor Stream.
There's one important difference. David, just one more thing with Bookshare.
Text-to-speech.
Yeah, it's text-to-speech.
Text-to-speech, not human voice.
Yeah.
That's right, text-to-speech. That's why a lot of people like VoiceDream Reader, because it has a whole list of different voices that you can add for like $5 that are so close to human, you would be surprised. I like the James voice on VoiceDream Reader. He's my favorite. No, they don't stream the books. I mean, if you download them, yes, you can read with some kind of a reader,
Daisy
reader on your computer. They're much better than they used to be. That's right. That's because most of the books they get these days are direct publisher files. They're not scanned by volunteers out in the field like originally, but they have 610,000 books in their collection.
So
it's a huge resource of additional materials, lots of textbooks, lots of nonfiction, lots of professional stuff, and literature and recreational reading as well. So, all right, you know how to reach me at the Perkins Library, but let me just give you the phone number, 617-972-7240, or you can send a general email to library@perkins.org, or you can email me at kim.charlson@perkins.org. All right? Thanks. One more, Frank?
Real quick one.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much. My colleague Rick Kamen had read on a Metro newspaper, and then I saw in the Watertown tab about campus-wide access.
I forgot to put that on my list, David. Thank
you. Beg pardon?
I forgot to put that on my talking list.
You can pay me later.
I will. Thank you for the reminder.
Was it Ira?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, David. So David is reminding me of something that the Perkins did in January. We had a press conference with Ira, which is the new service where you can connect with a live human who can answer questions or do different things with you that you needed a little bit of sighted assistance for 5 minutes to sort out a bunch of stuff, or you're downtown and you can't find the building you're supposed to go to, or, you know, all kinds of different things. Brian used it Saturday morning because I wanted to shampoo my hair. And guess what's in the bathroom in this hotel? About 5 different bottles that are absolutely all identical. I said, I'm not putting body wash on my hair. Call Ira. So he called Ira. But we did pay attention to the cardinal rule that you're not supposed to call Ira in the bathroom in a hotel when you have no clothes on, because guess what? They might see more than you expected because there's a mirror in the bathroom, right? So the camera faces outward, but it's going to face outward right at the mirror. So just remember to wear your clothes when you talk to Ira. Perkins has, we were the first campus to offer campus access. And campus access for Ira is if you are an Ira subscriber, and this is a fee-for-service program where you can sign up at different levels and you get 100 minutes or 200 minutes for different price levels that you can access the live assistance to help you with things. So when you come to Perkins and you enter the campus, you are in an IRA-free zone. So if you are a subscriber and you come to Perkins, you can use IRA for free when you are on the campus. So you can use it to navigate around, to find a building. You can use it in buildings. You can read something, whatever you need to do. That is free access while you are on the Perkins campus. This is part of our partnership with IRA. So.
GPS.
It's so the campus is geomapped. So Ira geomapped the campus, and they put markers around it. It's periphery. So if you can be in an Uber, and you drive onto the Perkins campus, and it'll say you're entering an Ira free zone. So you know that you've entered a free zone.
Does it extend to Joey's house? Could he get like free Ira for life?
Well, he can get free access when he's in his office. I doubt that it would get to his house. Well, he's only two houses away, but he'll have to try it. So, but you have to be a subscriber of Ira to get access to it, and you can test it if you haven't had an experience with Ira. We have, a unit at the library because I'm the manager of the Ira account. So, if you want to try it sometime, you can do that. I'll just tell you one of the strange things Brian did with it. He cleaned our freezer. So, there's no great way to label food in your freezer. We do put Braille on it with stickers, but after you've read about three things, your fingers are frozen. And it's really hard to read Braille when you have frozen fingers. So it's just tough. So he used an Ira agent, and they went shelf by shelf, and they looked at all the stuff, and the Ira agent made an email message, and he said shelf one, told him what was on it. They threw out stuff that was freezer burned, went to each shelf. So Brian has a record of all the things in our downstairs freezer, and then he cleaned it out, and it was really helpful because, frozen fingers, you can only do so much. So there's a lot of things. You're only limited by your creativity on what you do with Ira, but it's amazing technology that really provides a lot of independence and freedom for people. So thank you, David. I really appreciate you reminding me of that. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Kim.
And with that, we've come to the end of Council Connection for the month of July. If you have any questions or comments about anything you've heard on the show, or would just like to leave us a message in general, you can reach us at our Fillmore box at 773-572-6311. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again when we'll return in August with another edition of Council Connection. Meanwhile, enjoy the summer and take care.